Is up, everybody, and welcome to the tailgate. This is Tailgate Talks powered by The Nation. You're listening to episode 219, and tonight we got a good one for you guys. When you have a tweet that crosses Texas Tech Nation like it does, when you have Texas Tech offseason and portal news going on, who do you got to reach out to? You got to reach out to RC Maxfield and our guy, our favorite guest, our most returning guest returns. It has been a minute since we talked to him, but we brought him on to discuss all things Texas Tech basketball with the transfer portal, dissect how other teams have handled the portal, teams that have done good, teams that have done bad with it, and then taking a look at what we're going to do with Texas Tech basketball in this upcoming offseason and Grant McCaslin's first like full offseason with the Red Raiders. Plus, we had a little breaking news happen as we were recording with RC. So really fun episode with RC. Always love having him on the tailgate. And to catch everything we're doing here at Tailgate Talks through this offseason, through the rest of baseball season, you got to follow us on Apple, follow us on Spotify. Give us those five stars for the tailgate. And if you listen to us on Apple, we always appreciate a review there. Also, follow us on social media. We are on Twitter at @tailgate_talks. That's where we do most of our posting and interacting with people, but we do have Facebook, Instagram, and a YouTube channel. Lastly, if you have anything you'd like us to discuss on the tailgate, comments, questions, topics of conversation, you can always shoot us an email at tailgatetalkspod@gmail.com. So with all that said, let's go ahead and get into this interview with RC Maxfield.
We're going to start this thing off right. Raiders!
Well, the Texas Tech portal is off and running, and there are being tweets fired at a Texas Tech personality, and so who better to have on the tailgate other than our favorite guest, RC Maxfield, joining us once again. How we doing, RC?
Not too bad. I appreciate y'all having me on, fellas. It's been an interesting couple weeks.
It's been an interesting couple weeks, to say the least. And so let's get right into it. The tweet the other night, the tweet that set Texas Tech Twitter kind of on fire that night. So if you're not familiar with what happened, or if you're not on Twitter, Matt Steff, former player's father, kind of called out RC on the Twitter for no real
Did
reason.
Did y'all take it as a call out?
I kind of took it as a call out. I didn't know what to take it as.
I didn't have a clue.
That's how I took it, but we got to get from the man and figure out how he took it. So RC, when that Twitter notification came across your screen, I don't know how you do Twitter if you have your notifications off or if somebody else texted you. Just kind of run us through how that all happened and your thought process when this situation played out the other night.
Yeah, I don't have notifications to my phone, but I was on Twitter at the time. And so I'm sure y'all know when you're on Twitter, you get a notification. It pops up at the top. And I was like, okay, what is he saying right now? You know, we don't really talk too much. We used to, but obviously not anymore with Drew off the team. And I looked at it. And I just thought to myself, I was like, I don't know how to take this. I don't know if you're calling me out. I don't really know what you're trying to say here. Personally, I mean, after thinking about it for a second, I really didn't take it as a shot. I thought it was more of him taking a shot, not at me, but the program in the sense of, hey, this is what happens when you do X, Y, and Z, at least from his perspective. And so, you know, maybe he was calling me out. I didn't take it that way. Maybe I'm too naive to take it that way. But
I just didn't understand him tagging you in that.
That was the thing that threw me off. That was the thing. He was quote tweeting me.
Yeah.
And I was going to see the notification. Yeah. And maybe he just doesn't understand how that's how Twitter works. That's fine too. It doesn't matter. But I was just like, that's kind of weird. And then my phone blew up. I mean, no joke, in a 30-minute span, I told my wife, I was like, I think my phone's about to blow up. And she was like, why? And I showed her the notification. She was like, that's weird as hell. And I was like, yeah, I don't think you're the only one that's going to think that. And literally by the time she was looking at my phone, in about a 30-minute span, I got 25 texts I saw all the notifications on Twitter. I didn't know what the hell was going on, to be honest. I wasn't too mad at it in terms of, like, I didn't take it personal or anything, but it was cool to kind of see, I guess, tech Twitter having my back in a way.
Yeah. I mean, he took the tweet down after.
Yeah, I almost like 20
minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, but what do they say? Screenshots live forever. And trust me, a lot of people got that screenshot, including myself. But like I said, I didn't take it personal or anything, but I just thought the overall cool thing from my perspective was, like, I had multiple people like, how dare you come at RC like that? I was like, well, people can come at me if they don't agree with what I'm saying, but I appreciate it. I appreciate the sentiment, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it wasn't the weirdest thing I've had in my mentions lately. You know, people have been getting blocked left and right by me. I'm not afraid to block somebody. So, but it was one of the ones that, yeah, you're right. It kind of went a little, I guess, Texas tech community viral per se.
Yeah, I mean, he's not already not on the good side of Red Raider fans. And so,
yeah,
you know, the way he's gone about this whole thing is a whole completely other discussion in itself.
I do want to say this personally, like, just me personally, I have nothing bad to say about Matt. Like, every interaction I've had with him in person, good dude. Completely different dude, though, it seems like, on social media. Yeah. So it is what it is on that front. But I'm not going to say anything bad about it from a personal standpoint, because I've only had like 3 conversations. He's been good to me from that standpoint. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah. Take the high road. That's we can appreciate that. But it was an odd situation that unfolded really the other night indeed. And so we're already planning on having you on. So that just added more conversation to the podcast. So let's get into the Texas Tech basketball side of things. We haven't had you on in a while. We've had a new coach come aboard. We've had a whole basketball season now. And so that's past us, and the off season is here, and players are hitting the portal. And the other night, the big name that hit the portal for Texas Tech, Pop Isaacs. And so that drew a lot of shock from a lot of people. A lot of people kind of already, as on the Scarlet and Black Insider had posted, things were trending in that direction. So just to lead us off, RC, how did we get here with Pop leaving the program, and what does this mean for Texas Tech basketball as we head into the first full offseason with Grant McCaslin at the helm?
Yeah, I appreciate you shouting out the Scarlet and Black Insider. Austin was the one that broke the news over there. He's been doing a great job. So is Jacob, and I've just been riding coattails, it feels like, early on. But, yeah, I think, you know, I personally caught wind of this around February. Early February, that I thought, okay, maybe this is going to happen. I know that there was something where a family member of Pop reached out to somebody over at Scarlet and Black when we posted originally, when the site went up, like, hey, there's a really good shot that Pop goes in the portal. And they were like, no, that's not true at all. Yada, 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 typical stuff, and understandable in that regard for them.
Right.
But I had caught wind of it, you know, in February, in the sense of, it felt like Grant wanted to go in a different direction. And that's kind of where it came down to, in the sense that you have all these exit meetings, and it was just a heart to heart, truth being told from Grant's side, truth being told from Pop's side. And the way that I interpreted it was, okay, Grant just doesn't want Pop back because he wants to go a different direction from the guard perspective, which, nothing wrong, because Pop is going to be one of the most highly coveted guards in the portal. He's going to be all right.
Yeah.
In that regard, it's just, they wanted to change things up. He's not very efficient. He wanted to go find a more efficient guard that played to his style. And you think about it from the Grant McCaslin perspective, he's always had what people would consider efficient guards. And Pop just isn't that guy. It doesn't mean he's not talented. Yeah. He's just not an efficient guy. He's a roller coaster guy. When he's hot, I said it over on Scarlet and Black, when he's hot, no one can debate it. He's a top 5-7 player, one of those two, like, in that range in the Big 12. He's one of those guys. But when he's off, he's a liability at some points. And so you take with the good, with the bad, and I don't think you would be in the position you were if you were Texas Tech if you didn't have Pop Isaacs this year. Like, you don't make the tournament without him. But I think it's also fair, they wanted to go in a different direction, and Pop will have plenty of suitors, whether that's on the West Coast. I know that there's some teams in Texas that'll probably show a little bit of interest as well, even within the Big 12. But, you know, this is one of those deals where this is modern college basketball, where you have those exit interviews and coaches process guys. Guys just want to leave. Sometimes it's a mutual decision. It felt like if I had to give like a percentage to it, like this was a 70-30, not probably even more, 80-20 Grant decision. Because from everything I've heard, Pop wanted to come back, but sometimes, you know, you just want to go a different direction.
Yeah, that was the story after the tournament, right? And, you know, we don't take anything a player says right after a loss as
nor should
fact.
You. Yeah, nor should you.
But he said he wanted to be back. I think his dad was pretty adamant on Twitter about him wanting to come back and having, you know, his procedure.
I think that's the truth,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Pop did want to come back. Like, I truly, like, in my heart, believe that right now with the current information we have. But again, I think Grant wanted to go in a different direction. And when Pop heard that, okay, well, I got to go find somewhere else. And again, make no mistake about it, Pop will find a new home and he will be very happy there, wherever it is.
Dustin, your thoughts on Pop? Last week we were doing this podcast feeling kind of confident that he might return. Of course, things in the NIL world change in a heartbeat. So, yeah, your thoughts right quick.
Yeah, I'm not completely surprised because there's a lot of factors, like the kind of guard he is, being smaller, volume shooter, like RC said. There's also the family health in there also that has to factor in, I would think, in those exit interviews on Pop side of things, you know. So I'm not completely shocked by it, really. Just sucks to only have a guy for 2 years who you thought was going to stick around a little longer, and you're wiped clean from what you had as of 2 years ago now.
Yeah, for me, you know, I liked watching Pop. I know the inefficiencies were there. I know, like you said, RC, when he's bad, he can be really bad and a liability. When he's good, like that BYU game, he can, you know, carry you to victories. And so from my perspective, it's just, you know, it's frustrating to have like 15 players across the country who are like first conference, you know, and in their respective conferences. Like, we're just got this all-star roster out there of Texas Tech transfers. You add another one to that. The discourse around Pop leaving has been really interesting, RC. Like, you see a lot of people on Twitter like, oh, he's mid. What do you make of people's reactions to him transferring? I think it's very interesting how it's either you're on the he's terrible or he's really good and we shouldn't be pissed. What do you think about that?
I think there's probably a better word for it, but it's the only one that comes to mind. Like, Pop is the most divisive player that I can remember in my time of like creating content or covering Tech basketball. Like, you either firmly love the guy or you wanted him gone the second that he stepped foot on a basketball floor. Like, it is nuts. And now, obviously, the off-the-court stuff, we don't have to get into that. Like, everybody has an opinion on that. Yeah. I don't really speak about it just because we don't have enough info. Yeah,
we don't know.
But I'm sure that that's part of it in terms of why people want him gone. But he's so divisive because you go over to the YouTube channel over on Back to 12 and, like, literally, it's funny. When I talk about Pop, I try and stay neutral as much as possible. I probably lean towards the I like Pop more than I don't like Pop side of things.
Same.
But it's fascinating because, like, you'll see one comment where it's like, Texas Tech wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Pop. And then the next comment will be like, he is the most mid point guard I've ever seen wear the scarlet and black jersey. I'm like, dude, we can't have it both ways here. Like, what are we doing? Yeah. You know, like, I get it. He's a roller coaster. That was the nickname I gave him from the jump. In terms of, it just felt like any night you didn't know what you were going to get. Like, you could be, you know, on the Superman ride and then literally the next half you're below the ground. It felt like, almost in a way.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, fans are allowed to react the way that they want to react. I do think that it's ludicrous that people are, you know, going after him and cursing at him and stuff like that. Like, come on, be a little bit classy kind of deal. But I also understand, like, I'm not in a place to tell fans how to feel. Like, you should feel however you want. Just be, I don't want to say professional about it, but just
respectful.
Think about it. If that was your kid or you or whatever it may be, like, how would you want people to talk to you kind of deal? And I get that that's easier said than done.
Oh, well. Yeah.
I do get that. I get that. Because emotions, they play a toll. I get it.
emotions and fandom, it's a crazy world. I mean, just get on Twitter and see everything that goes on and those comments and stuff like that. But, you know, we've been on the We Like Pop, obviously, on this side, and we understand that he can be a negative for you. But I don't think mid players get third team all conference. like that's just, you know.
Yeah, top five scorer in the best league in America. Come on,
it's not a mid player. And so, Dustin, any other thoughts you have on Pop here before we kind of take a look at some of the other players exiting?
Every time we get a transfer portal entry on our end, I, for one, say, you know, I'm not going to say either way on this. More people need to just not express their feelings online about it. I feel two different ways about two different players, but you haven't seen me post about either of them. Yeah. That's more of how you should handle this. Because, yeah, there are families involved, and this is an actual person that, you know, has been here for 2 years and gave a lot and likes the place. And you don't know how these exit interviews went and what else might be going on. And, you know, maybe they just need something else in their life that can't get here. And this is their opportunity to go take that. Good for them. Let them go, and you don't have to comment on everything.
Yeah,
no, don't do that. That's not fun. That's not fun. No,
it is in these circumstances.
No, we wouldn't even have Twitter. That's the reasonable. That's the reasonable take. But social media is not there to be reasonable.
How dare you, Dustin? How dare you tell me not to let my thoughts out there?
How dare you be the mature adult in the room? Yeah. How dare you?
I will say this, and this is my hot take. I hate when everybody's like, best of luck, best of luck. Because I'm like, best of luck might involve him going to Kansas and beating us. Like that.
I don't care for that either.
Yeah, just wait. Just wait for the best of luck kind of deal.
Yeah.
But I do think it was kind of cool, like, Grant having that video. I'm sure y'all saw it, where he was like, hey, these guys, you know, doing what's best for them. They're Red Raiders for life. Like, it almost felt like, I don't think it was. I think it was pre-planned in the sense of he was going to put a video out regardless.
Yeah. Right.
But the timing of it was super interesting.
Yeah.
Just because, again, 24 hours prior, what happened? Pop into the portal. And so it's like, okay, I get it. This was pre-planned. It was Easter. I got it. But the timing of that video was super fascinating.
Yeah, social media team was like, hey,
just lay off a little bit.
Yeah, we might need to get something out here. And so that's the big news. Pop Isaacs to the portal yet again. Red Raider Nation is kind of getting familiar with this, with having, you know, top players hit the portal. But some other names that have now entered the transfer portal. We've obviously already had Kygon Lindsey, who we've known for a while. Robert Jennings entered the portal last week. He was one that I think a lot of people were on the fence of, whether he was going to come back, whether he was going to hit the portal. What did you hear about Robert Jennings, and what do you understand about him hitting the portal this time?
That one was that was a process one.
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, a mutual process one, in the sense that I think RJ just wanted a bigger role that he wasn't going to get here. And Grant wanted to go a different direction in the front court, in the sense of real prototypical bigs and not these kind of tweeners, almost, in a way. And that's what RJ is. He's just a tweener.
Yeah.
Which is, there's nothing wrong with that. He'll have a place to play, and a good one at that, I'm pretty sure. But that was something that it felt like it was known for a while. Another guy that probably wanted to stay in terms of his love for Texas Tech, but you only get so many years to play college basketball, and he wanted to play it and actually be on the floor and play meaningful minutes. So that's kind of how I took it, and there was no hard feelings on that one. That one was one of those ones where both guys, Grant and RJ, went into the discussion, is how I understand it, and totally understood both sides of it. So nothing but respect for RJ in that regard. And I think he ends up at like a school like FAU. I think that would be a perfect place for him.
Yeah, I agree.
With Jacus from Baylor.
Yeah.
Like, that would, he knows him. Like, he's a good high mid major big.
Yeah.
That's what I think RJ is. But maybe he goes the Power Five route and an opportunity to win a job somewhere in a front court. But overall, I mean, he's a guy that really improved and gave Texas Tech a lot of valuable minutes when they needed them, when Warren Washington was out. So, I know some people wish they had another big. That big was at Iowa State now, at least a commit for Iowa State and DeSean Jackson. But,
yeah.
You know, overall, I mean, I don't think there's any hard feelings between Grant and RJ and anything like that. It's like, yeah, he probably wanted to come back, but Grant wanted to get bigger in the front court.
Yeah. We've spent a lot of time talking about Robert Jennings on there. So
yeah, I saw the fist pumps. My God.
You know, he's a interesting player in that, like, he did give us some moments that were nice, but then he had some moments where he gets blocked by the rim and just kind of a frustrating player at moments where you knew the potential was there. But my thoughts on it is he was playing center when he's a four, and he definitely was not in his position. And that's going to happen when you're playing the bigs of the Big 12, and you're kind of thrust into having to be that starting center. And so I think there was a lot of frustrations on some of the dumb fouls that he would commit where you're on the other side of the court committing a foul or stuff there. But ultimately we saw the potential. And so we talked about him a little bit at length last week. And so we'll move on to the latest entry, Damarian Williams. No shock to Red Raider Nation there. Barely saw the court. Almost forgot he was on the team.
Travel to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Nope. He wasn't even there at the end. Yeah. That's why our bench looks so small. It's just like three players on the bench. We don't need to necessarily dive into Damarian Williams, but he's the latest name. Is there any other names we should expect to see hit the portal? Is there any guys that you're still kind of keeping your eye on that you're kind of 50-50 about as we're, kind of getting to the point here where a lot of names are pretty much in the portal?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Lamar doesn't enter. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are expecting that.
Yeah.
The name that I'm probably monitoring most in the sense of, like, I don't know if it's 50-50, but maybe like 65-35 that he stays, is Kerwin.
Yes.
I think that one's really interesting from that standpoint, in the sense of, like, I wonder if the guys that they target in the portal could make his decision in terms of if he wants to enter. I'm not saying it will, but I think that would be interesting. But outside of those two guys, I don't expect you to lose anyone else. I think you're going to build around D5. I think that's probably the most obvious thing you can do. If you're Grant McCaslin, and he even said as much that he's going to do it,
mm-hmm.
In the postgame presser, I would expect Chance to say he could have a bigger role in terms of maybe not minutes, but starting.
Right.
And then you got a guy like Ameli Yalahu coming back with RJ gone. I fully expect EY to be back. Also, by the way, ESPN, please, for the love of God, stop calling him Emily. Like, what are we doing? It's Ameli.
It's Ameli.
Ameli.
I've heard.
Yeah, sorry.
So at the games at the United Supermarkets Arena, we've heard him say Emily, the announcer, when he would score.
I've literally heard him say his own name, and it's Ameli.
Okay.
That's the thing. Like, I'm confused too.
Yeah.
Because on the pronunciation guide, it says Emily. But I've literally heard in interviews when he's like 16, you can go look it up on YouTube, when he's over in Finland, it's like, can you say your name and your position? And he's like, my name is Ameli Yalahu.
Okay.
I play forward. And I'm like, okay, well, that, unless he's lying to me like Alvin Kamara did.
Right.
Did y'all remember that story where Kamara like literally mispronounced his name for the first 7 years of his career because he didn't want to correct anybody?
And that same with like the Kelseys, like Travis.
Yes.
They say like they're.
Yeah, I think that was a joke, but
Ron Taylor did that.
Yeah, plenty of people. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think he'll be back, and then Devin will be back as well. The only reason I wouldn't see Devin Cambridge back is if he goes pro.
Right.
Which is possible. He's an older guy. Maybe he just wants to get on with his professional career. That'd be totally understandable, but I know that Grant would love to have him back and have him play meaningful minutes for the Red Raiders next year.
Okay. Well, that's a good insight for everybody listening on kind of what to expect, as, you know, the portal changes drastically. So who knows? Maybe next week we're completely different information on that. You never know. But wanted to break that down. But then one of the other reasons we wanted to have RC on, and we're going to have this discussion now about the NIL transfer portal era as we enter the fourth offseason now with NIL. And, you know, the transfer portal has obviously been changing throughout, where players can go and immediately be eligible even if they are a two-time transfer, and so how that's changed sports. And so we're going to kind of take a look at that, look at teams who have had success in this era so far, teams who have struggled in this era so far. You can maybe throw Texas Tech in this. I don't even know where we would fall in that, because we've had good, we've had bad. But so we're going to kind of go into that discussion before we dive into what we're looking for Texas Tech to do in this portal. And so to lead that off, Dustin has a question for us and for RC to get us started.
Yeah, RC, just in general on the portal, how do teams and also how do individual players handle the portal with so many names entered, and it's like a 6-week whirlwind? I mean, we're almost up to like 1,200 players in there. And then I'll see, you know, such and such has been contacted by, and it's a list of 35 schools. I'm like, how are teams handling, you know, 1,100 plus players in the portal? Yep. And how are players handling, you know, getting contacted left and right with this whirlwind of a portal?
Yeah, I think each team obviously goes about it differently. And let's get the elephant out of the room first and foremost. Everybody's tampering. Get over it.
Yeah.
Let's just get that out of the way. So, you know, when you hear about a guy, he entered the portal and then he has a no contact next to his name. It's like, we know why.
Yeah.
We know why. Let's not, you know, try and sugarcoat this. We know why. I mean, teams do it differently across the country, right? Like you see it from the standpoint of Arkansas, where they're uber aggressive. I mean, it feels like Arkansas and Ole Miss, even with Chris Beard now, they're in on everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels like from the jump, they're making a phone call. I don't know how they still have battery in their phone type stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's slower teams like Texas Tech, where it's like they're a little bit more methodical. Texas Tech has reached out to, I would probably say, about 20, 25 players at this point. But compared to other schools, that feels like nothing.
Right.
But, you know, some schools have a board. Some schools have analytic sites that they use in terms of, hey, these are the specific metrics we're looking at. Whether that's, you know, offensive rebounding rate, assist rate, whatever it may be. There's so many things you can look at. And they pinpoint some of those guys that are excellent, great, very good, whatever the terminology is that they use. And they go about it that way. I think the interesting part is, like, you talk about how do they contact them. I think that that's very individualized as well, in the sense of, like, I think Texas Tech fans are very well-versed in terms of the agency aspect of things. Yeah. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
And so there's part of that. And then there's you know, the part where some of these guys, it's just family members, right? Like, for example, I don't think they'll have a problem with me saying this, like RJ. RJ, his brother helps him tremendously with that, in the sense of, like, everything going on right now. That's not a rare case.
Right.
There's a lot of people that do it that way. From a player's perspective, I don't know how they do it, because I've been told from, like, multiple people. Like, I'm talking, like, I would probably venture to say 20 plus people at this point, in terms of since the portal has started getting going, not this cycle, but really since it's became like a big, big thing where I always call it the wild, wild west. Like, I've had at least 20 plus players or a family member from them reach out to me and basically say, like, oh yeah, we've had multiple schools contact us right in the middle of conference play. I'm like, yeah, if you're not doing it, you're doing your program a disservice, because there's no rules.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, there's no rules. And so, first and foremost, they have to figure that out. But from a handling it standpoint, I think it's very individualized in the terms of, hey, maybe, you know, they treat it like a job, 9 to 5. Like, you can call me 9 to 5, but after 5, I'm not picking up, kind of deal. I've also heard crazy stories where kids are literally having to keep their phone, like, on a charger all day because of the amount of phone calls they're getting. And I'm like, how is that okay? Like, and again, not every coach knows that these guys are getting reached out to that much, unless you're, you know, crazy high level guys. But, you know, I think it's just individuals, you know, going about it their own way and making sure that it works for them. But, you know, the numbers in terms of how many guys are in the portal are nuts. I know you saw 1,200.
It's almost at 1,200. I think I saw like 1,150 or 60. Earlier.
Do you want the updated number? I have it. Yeah, it's almost 1,600.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
yeah.
And
over in the last 36 hours,
yeah,
basically 500 guys have entered the portal.
There's going to be more, you know.
Well over 2,000.
How many more days do we have in this window for players at the portal? There's still a couple weeks in there.
till the end of the month.
Yeah, and then you have a dead period that I believe starts on the 4th, maybe the 9th. I think I'm switching it. It starts on the 9th and goes through the 14th, or it starts on the 4th and goes through the 9th. One of the two. So that just means you can't have any visits or anything. You still get contacted, but you can't have any visits.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's nuts, dude. I don't know how some – like, y'all know Tobias, good friend of mine. I don't know how the hell he keeps up with this shit.
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it, dude. He's very connected, but, like, it feels like every other second he's posting something on Twitter about another kid going in the portal. I'm like, how do you have this ready?
You got to have two phones at like that point, I feel like.
Yeah, got to be Kevin Gates or something, yeah. Right? You know what I mean? Like, you got to be. But yeah, no, I mean, it's nuts, man. It's absolutely nuts. And I can only imagine what it's like from a national perspective trying to cover it, let alone just Texas Tech.
Yeah, it sounds insane. And you got all these people, like, every day you just get on Twitter and you just scroll and there's this guy's entered the portal, that guy's entered the portal, this guy's been contacted by
I've literally gotten like 3 texts since we started about guys that Tech may go after. Like, it's nuts. It's like, okay, I don't know if they're actually going to do it or not.
You have teams like Iowa State still playing tournament games and signing transfer guys.
Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting part. So that part, I know a lot of people have a problem with the portal window and like how it works. And like, I know you hear Joey McGuire talk about it from a football side, remember? And they changed that. So that's going to be a little bit different for football in terms of early signing period because of bowl games, yada, yada, yada. But from a basketball perspective, I'm almost glad the way it is, just from the sheer standpoint of it allows guys to make a decision and get on with it. But the reason I don't feel bad for coaching staffs is, for one, coaching staffs have never been bigger. They just haven't. Yeah. They've never had, you know, the resources they've had like right now. I mean, TJ Ossenberger talked about it where he's like, I've got 2 guys that are just in charge of our recruiting right now, in the sense of they don't help us game plan. All they do from sunup till sundown is recruit. And so you still got to think about it. You have 5 other coaches plus all your assistants in terms of GAs and all that stuff helping you. So you got plenty of guys. So I don't really have a problem with the actual, like, when it starts. That being said, they got to put some guardrails on it because it's nuts, dude. I mean, it's just the wild, wild west and anything goes. And I don't know when we're going to see, like, the consequences of the actions of these years, but we're going to see them eventually.
Yeah, and that kind of gets us into this next topic of the NIL portal discussions, where we're kind of breaking down teams who have struggled, teams who have had success in this area. Like you said, I think a lot of programs have a lot of issues trying to get on the right side of this, whether it's players just always leaving and having to refill their entire roster every year, Texas Tech, or teams that just struggle to – can't get players in the portal and stuff like that. And so that's kind of why we're going to have a look at here, see if we can identify some traits from teams that struggle, some traits from teams that are successful, and see how we can, you know, think about Texas Tech applying those traits in this offseason. And so let's start off on the struggling side of things here in the NIL portal era. I've said this is the 4th offseason now with NIL. NIL came that Adonis Arms, Bryson Williams, that go around that summer. And so we've had teams with some track record now. And so, RC, I'll kick it over to you for your first team that's struggling in this era and just kind of let you go from there.
Yeah, from like a money perspective, Kansas State.
Yeah.
They're very lucky to have Jerome Tang. I'll say that. Or else they would be in Oklahoma State territory.
Yeah.
Their NIL is, well, apologize for cussing, dog shit.
Yeah.
It's awful. Their NIL is terrible. Oklahoma State's isn't much better, even though I think they had a tremendous hire with Lutz. Was at Corpus Christi before that.
Western Kentucky.
Took Western Kentucky to the tournament for the first time, and I think it was almost like a decade. So I think they had a good hire there. But Kansas State, like, from an NIL perspective, they are, I mean, an eternity behind. And I think when it's all said and done, it's going to be not the reason, but a major reason why they lose Jerome Tang. And so I don't know when that happens, but if they don't change it quick, They're a team that I'm looking at in the sense of like they have to figure it out. Oklahoma State's there on the basketball side, but
yeah.
I will say this in terms of the Oklahoma State side of things. I think they do a fantastic job of NIL on the football side. That's just where they give all their resources to.
Right.
In the sense of, and it's worked out for them. I mean, their football program has been great with Gundy at the helm. You know, it feels like every year they're winning at least 9 games. And so they've done a good job with that. Could they be better? Sure. And I think a major reason why Boynton isn't no longer there is just for the sheer fact of their basketball NIL isn't very good. Another one that's not very good in terms of basketball is Mississippi State. But Chris Jans likes it like that. He likes those dogs, man. He likes those guys that'll get in a fight in the parking lot after a game. So I don't know if he really minds it too much. But yeah, those are the three that kind of came to mind. There's others as well. I'm sure I'm forgetting like a big one somewhere. But the ones in the forefront of a Big 12er's mind in terms of Kansas State and Oklahoma State from a basketball perspective, those are the two that really jump off the page.
Dustin, you got any teams that RC didn't mention there that you've kind of identified as teams that have struggled here in this period?
I feel like Memphis is one flashy team that gets portal guys and never does something with them.
Like, I feel that's like a Penny Hardaway problem, though, right?
They're using the transfer portal, and then it's just no results. Like, I feel like they get, you know, 2 or 3, 4, 5-star former type players, and then it's nothing again. Like, year and year and year. And, yeah, you got flashy Penny Hardaway, and Memphis was there, you know, once upon a time with Cal and them. But, like, I feel like they stuck out to me when I was looking through, you know, transfer guys going places and, like, not succeeding with it.
Yeah, they're always in on every player because they got that FedEx money.
That's the other thing. They're in on everybody.
Who is that SMU point guard that they got like 2 years ago? Kendrick Davis or something like that? That I think we were trying to make a push after. They got Wiseman there.
He got a bag, though. Good for him.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Memphis, though. Like, I think their NIL collective is really good. I just think they have a shitty coach.
Yeah, I agree. He's never
proven
anything.
You know, it's that kind of deal.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's a good coach. Which is fine.
But yeah, he's been there for like 5. This is what, year 6 for him or something like that?
I believe it's year 6, yep.
God, that's crazy. So the programs I identified here, I had Kansas State on my like interesting teams to me because, and I think I kind of want to talk about them a little bit more when we talk about Tech, because I think the year 1 to 2 of Tang is very similar to kind of like the Mark Adams year 1 to 2 here, minus the all the crazy off-court stuff that, you know, we don't want to get into.
Tint on the Womble.
I had Oklahoma State. I had Oklahoma State as one of my teams. I had Michigan as one of my teams, and I have Washington as one of my teams that I identified here. And what I've done is I went and I dove into these rosters and just saw how many players that they returned on each one of these. Oklahoma State returned 43% of their roster from last year to this past season. They had 5 players that transferred out of the program while 3 exhausted eligibility. 57% of the roster is just completely new faces, and 31% of their roster features players that have transferred into the program. So I was kind of shocked by that. A low number of transfer players into that program. But obviously, you know, you lost over half of your roster from last year to this year. Michigan was an interesting one to me. The Juwan Howard thing just never worked out. I think also with their academic standards and their admissions that they've kind of taken a hit on some of these portal targets. Like Terrence Shannon Jr. was supposed to go to Michigan, right? But he couldn't get in because of classes, so he ends up at Illinois.
So was what's his name that went to
there was another
Arizona
guy.
Love?
Caleb Love. Yes.
Yeah, there
Caleb.
You go. Yeah.
And so they're missing out on some big name players there that I think could have given them more success. But you know, they're an interesting team to me. So I looked their roster, 66% of their roster they retained from the previous year to last year. They only had 3 players transfer out of their program. They, of course, lost 2 of their best players to the NBA. They lost 1 to eligibility. 26% of their roster this year featured players who had transferred into the program. And then the last team I looked at here was Washington. Washington only returned 23% of their roster. They had a ton of transfers, ton of freshmen, 26% of their roster features transfers. And they last year to this year, they had three players transfer out of the program, or six players transfer out of their program. Sorry. Five players exhausted eligibility. So Washington had a lot of moving parts with their roster last year. So one of the things I just kind of want to look at was how much these rosters are changing on the bad side. And so, you know, Oklahoma State having to change over half of their roster, Michigan and Washington having to change over half of their roster too. Like, I think that's one of the big things is not that stability, which we can get into Texas Tech a little bit. But any other traits that y'all identified from some of these teams that you think are kind of like those red flags from some of these schools? RC, I'll kick it to you. Money.
Like, I think another school that kind of popped into my mind when we talked about it is like a school, probably shouldn't bring it up, but like Virginia. Like, how the hell are you not better?
Yeah.
Like, you again, sorry to poke a wound that I know won't heal for a long time. Like, you won a national title.
Yeah.
How are you not more invested in terms of going out there and getting guys? Like, I get it. Your playing style, I'd rather watch paint dry four times over, but like, it's just, how are you not better? And it's just, I think the thing with NIL that sometimes we forget, because roster turnover, I think, is going to happen. You have to have buy-in from donors. If you don't have a guy that is like a Kirby Hocutt, like, say what you want about Kirby Hocutt, okay? But that man can fundraise.
Yeah.
Like, he's an elite fundraiser, okay? So you have to have a guy that is a salesman. That's almost the most important trait now for a coach. Not the coaching aspect of it, because you know they can talk ball. You know that they can do that, at least at a college level. It's who are the best salesmen, almost in a way, in the sense of who is going to be out there, you know, shaking hands, kissing babies, signing you know what. Like who can do that at the best level? And that's kind of where you're at. Or you just have oil money like SMU and you can go buy what you want.
A&M.
There are certain schools like that. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a very general, it's a generalization by me just to say money, but money. Like you have to have it. And if you don't, you're going to be left behind. And I think something that's going to leave a lot of people behind, I think Texas Tech is in danger of it, maybe less so than other schools, is if you're not in the SEC or Big Ten, you're probably going to be left behind financially. That's the reason Florida State's in court. That's the reason Clemson joined up too. So, I mean, it's just money. Like, I know it's very boring to say that, but I think that that's a big thing.
Well, I think it's interesting because I wouldn't have had Kansas State on here for money because I'm not like tuned into everybody's NIL budget or whatever. I just remember last year being like, oh, wow, they're getting everybody in the portal. Tyler Perry, Arthur Kaluma. Like, they had a lot of guys, big name guys that you were like, ooh, that's a guy that would be interesting. And they're like, oh, they're going to Kansas State. Oh, they're going to Kansas State. So I guess it kind of shocks you that the NIL, because I would have assumed by all the guys they're getting last year that they're dropping some bags. I guess it's just not a sustainable source of income that they're coming from, or I don't know if you have any insight on that.
I would just say it's the Jerome Tang effect, man. Like, people don't like to hear it, but players don't commit to your school. They commit to the coaches, and they just happen to wear a logo that's affiliated with that coach at that time. Yeah. So, you know, the Kansas State staff is so interesting from the standpoint of they were the only staff in college basketball that was made up of African Americans. Like, that's a that's a big deal to a lot of these guys, representation. And so you get to go play for a guy that, you know, has a similar background to me, like that kind of stuff. Like, that's big for those big for a lot of these guys. And so maybe they take less money for that. I just know what I've heard, in the sense of, from the Kansas State perspective, their president is overbearing. It's the reason that they lost Tomlin for just a silly thing off the court. Like, yeah, he punched somebody. I get it. He did a suspension. He got to play a game. And then the president was like, no, you don't get to play anymore. And Jerome was like, WTF, you know, like, what are we doing here? Like, he's our best player. That's a first round pick. And so, and not to mention the NIL. Yeah. The NIL is there either.
He goes to Memphis.
Yeah. He ended up in Memphis. No surprise. Right. So I don't know, man. I don't think they are like the, right, you know, in first place example or anything. But from like a Big 12 perspective, they're the team I look at. Like, they're the polar opposites of West Virginia. Like, yeah. West Virginia is killing NIL.
Yeah.
Like, they're really good. So.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because, like, one of the things I kind of want to, you know, talk about with this is just because you have access to all the players doesn't mean, like, all the players fit your system. I think we got
exactly.
We got a great example of that in year two of Mark Adams. Like, Fardaw Zamak was the number one transfer guy on all the rankings and didn't fit anything that we wanted to do here. It made literally no sense once you actually saw it. But, you know, you can get caught up by the names in the portal and, oh, what they did at these programs. And you're like, oh, yeah, we got to get them. We got to spend the money on this. But it doesn't always translate. It doesn't always fit your culture or your style. And I think that's like the main thing that you can take away from some of these programs. I think, you know, Kent State, kind of an example. Like, they had all the access in the world to these players, getting all these great players, don't make the tournament in year two, you know? And so good teams. Let's kind of take a look at the teams who we've deemed as successful programs in this era so far. RC, I'll kick it over to you to get us started.
We're strictly just talking like NIL, right? And also, I apologize that it just got like 85 times darker. Yeah, the light just went out.
It's okay.
Apologize.
It's all good. I kind of mean it as like teams who like have success with NIL, but also, you know, have success retaining players, because that's also part of it, that have success in the portal. Sure. Just kind of all together here. Like
from just basketball or like football too?
I'll give my number one, Illinois. It, like, from just basketball's okay. perspective, Illinois I have on here because they're a team, they returned 53% of their roster, so they had a lot of spots to fill. They've 46% of their roster is from players who have transferred into the program. I feel like they've done a good job identifying players, Terrence Shannon Jr., who fit exactly sure. what they want to do. They've had success. You know, last year they made the tournament. They were a first-round exit, understandable. But this year they got better. They won the Big Ten tournament. They make the Elite Eight with key parts of that roster being transfers, but also they kept a lot of players. Coleman Hawkins, has been at Illinois for several years. They have Luke Goody had been at Illinois for several years. So they have a roster consistency of guys that they get in the program, keep in the program, but then bring in good transfers to fill in some of those gaps to help get them to another level. So that's kind of my thinking on basketball teams that are doing good in this era. Do you get players on campus? Can you keep them? And do you get good transfers that help benefit your system? And then kind of all of it mesh into one kind of beautiful thing.
Yeah, I would go with North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I think they do a really – I mean, obviously it's very easy for a blue blood, but you think about it in the sense of like the portal era, you keep Baycott
yep.
and you keep RJ Davis for their entire careers.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Not to mention you go out and land a guy that probably should have ended up at Texas Tech if it wasn't for the former coach, and Elliot Shadu. The five-star point guard, probably should have been a Red Raider, but that's a different conversation to have. not to mention, you talk about some of the transfers they brought in. Cormac Ryan, I mean, stud from Notre Dame, right? Like, that's the kind of guy you need in the sense of he provides length and he's a knockdown shooter. So I think North Carolina definitely has to be in there from an NIL perspective. It's funny from like a non-basketball perspective. The school that I was thinking that's doing NIL the best arguably had the worst basketball program in the Power Six this year in Louisville.
Yeah.
Like,
interesting.
But
yeah,
just from like a Yeah. But, and then from another perspective, a school that I don't think a lot of people talk about basketball wise in terms of identifying transfers and then keeping younger guys that are talented there, Oregon. I think they do a good job. Obviously Nike helps with that. But they do a really good job. It also helps that they have a Hall of Fame head coach. So,
yeah,
Altman is one of the most underrated coaches in America, in my opinion. So
he aligns Rubik's
you have
cubes.
That. Yeah.
Shout out to John Rothstein.
He's so underrated. One of my favorite coaches for sure. But yeah, those are the two, like from a basketball perspective, that really come to mind in the sense of, I think they're doing a good job. Oh, another one, Florida. Florida's doing a good job. Yeah, they're doing it more so on the portal side of things than retaining guys because right. they got a new coach the past 2 years. So he's kind of trying to lay the foundation. But yeah, Florida is another one that I think they do a really good job from an NIL perspective of getting guys there that are really uber talented to go with some of those younger guys that they get from the high school ranks.
Yeah, Dustin, you got any other teams that you've kind of been looking at here?
Obviously, like, just roster-wise, you got to notice what Bama's done in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Like, they've shipped dudes out, but they've also brought in guys that fit their system and have hit home runs big time the last few years.
Yeah, Sears is nuts, dude. Yeah. That Sears story is nuts. From Ohio to this, like, what are we doing? It's wild.
Yeah, 40. I got stat for you. 40% of their roster is people who transferred into the program. This year, they came in with 40% of their roster from last season after losing 3 players to the NBA and 2 players that graduated, losing 5 players to the program to the portal.
It also won to jail.
Yeah, that too.
Like, I'm not trying to make a joke out of that. Played minutes. He played minutes. Like,
that's not on the rankings that he went to that other place.
Yeah, that wasn't like a transfer or graduation. Yeah, like, they don't track the jail aspect
have a
of it.
Stat
like,
for that, yeah.
Yeah, but like he played minutes. No, yeah, he was what I mean? Yeah. Like, and if we're gonna do that, I think you got to throw North Carolina State in there too. All five of their guys were transfers.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, so their roster, 43% of their roster is guys who have transferred into the program. 50% of their roster this year is just completely new faces. But DJ Burns, DJ Horn, both transfers, like you said. Like,
studs. Yeah,
a team that you wouldn't have said was killing it just a couple weeks ago.
It's crazy what 20 days will do to the image of a program, huh?
What one shot can do for your entire...
One missed free throw, right? By Virginia.
Brooks, like the other thing, like Bama's my big school there. The other thing I just kind of noticed looking at stuff was like, and couldn't help but not write down was like, there's quite a few mid-major teams that take guys from the Power Five that are doing really well. Like your Florida Atlantics, your San Diego States, Creighton. I know they're a good program, but they're still considered mid-major. And I mean, even if it's Big East, but like, they've done really well with getting guys like those schools that are taken. I know Texas Tech's a victim of it with a couple of those schools I listed, but taking guys that are not going to have a spot and want more minutes or different opportunity, different scenery, and then letting them develop in 2 or 3 years. And now you have a Vlad Golding who's going to be like very cherished transfer this year.
There was no trigger warning there for us. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, turn him into a beast and let him develop. Whereas our previous coaching staffs, you know, didn't have the patience for that. And I kind of just couldn't help but notice like some of those mid majors, and they've obviously made you notice them. Like San Diego State hasn't gone away the last couple years. You know, so like interesting to see mid majors using this by not hitting 4 and 5 star type huge guys and taking some development guys.
Well, yeah, I think that's a very interesting process. The one other team I wanted to shout out before I shout out the probably team who's doing it best. I want to shout out Iowa State here. I think they've done a pretty good job in this portal era with Ulzberger there at Iowa State. They get good freshmen in there. Taman Limpsey last year as a freshman stays, becomes an all-conference player. Momchilovic, a freshman who, like, is just a ridiculous jumper, a elite three-point shooter and a great player. But then they also brought in, they brought in 40% of that roster is transfer players. So they brought in very good transfer players to fill those spots, and they've just been a program that just gets better every single year to where next year you're already scared of like whatever they're going to be. They're already, like we mentioned, they already got a transfer in even while they were playing two transfers while they're playing in the tournament.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, you got to shout out the job that they're doing there to be a scary team in this Big 12 conference in this day and age of basketball. But the team who's killing it, UConn, man. UConn has been killing this era. They're looking like they're going to go back to back here. Now, of course, anything can happen, but you know, they're really impressive. They're a team that returned J. just, you know, 57% of their roster. They lost a lot of guys to the NBA. After you win a natty, you're going to do that. They also lost players who to the portal who wanted to go find more playing time because of guys coming into the roster. Stephon Castle, a freshman, but you know, they're killing it in this day and age. They're finding guys like Cam Spencer, a transfer from Rutgers, who comes in and he's a lethal three-point shooter and a great help for them. Tristan Newton, first team All-American. He's a ECU transfer, but they're also getting guys on campus and they're staying on campus. And so they're killing it. The last Final Four team that we haven't talked about, Purdue, their roster is very interesting. They like don't lose anybody. Their whole team is just Purdue guys. They have one guy who transferred in. Everybody else has gotten to Purdue and stayed at Purdue. I feel like that's kind of crazy in this day and age, just that like 76% of their roster from last year's team stayed and is on this team. I just feel like that's a stat you're not going to see a lot of anymore. So I wanted to shout the Final Four teams out. But yeah, any thoughts on those teams, RC?
No, I think man, if you saw Tristan Newton turning into this guy, you're a liar.
Yeah.
You're a liar. I thought he was good. I didn't think he'd be a first team All-American type guy. He might be my favorite player to watch in all of college basketball. He's a dog.
Yeah, he's
like, he can do whatever he wants when he wants to on either side of the floor. He won't be a lottery pick, I don't think. Maybe he will because this draft sucks. But
yeah,
like he's really good and he's going to make whatever NBA team he ends up with really, really happy because that's a guy that plays in the league for like a dozen years, and makes a lot of money, and plays on winning teams. Probably most importantly, because everywhere he goes, he wins. Even at ECU when they were garbage, he would somehow, you know, carry them to at least a chance to win their conference, in the tournament. And then now at UConn, I mean, yeah, they're going to go back-to-back for the first time since Florida, probably.
Yep.
Yeah, what I've heard about this draft is, like, it might suck, but you might be able to find a lot of guys who are going to be 10 to 12-year players in this league, like the Tristan Newtons, who are going to be guys who are going to find, like, role spots on teams and be successful. And so he's definitely one of those guys. UConn's just such a wagon. Like, every one of their players is just so elite at what they do and fits that system so perfectly.
They may have the best coach in the country.
He's incredible.
Hurley might be him. Yeah. I know he's top five, but I think you can make the argument right now he's one.
What he's put together there, this run, hey, you know, Illinois, the fantastic team, and they just blew them out of the water.
30-0 run.
Insane.
Fellas, I was making dinner. I had the game on. Like, my in-laws called. We talked to them for 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes. My wife goes into the living room and she goes, "Do you want to know the score?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, that'd be great." Meanwhile, remember, it was 24-23 at half.
Yeah, it was right there.
She's like, "It's 48-23." I'm like, "Stop lying. What's the actual score?"
No.
And she was like, 48-23. I was like, "Can you come in here and look at this so it doesn't burn while I go look?" She wasn't lying.
Yeah.
And then I literally hear them say, "They haven't scored in 50 real minutes." And I'm like, 50 real minutes? Who the hell does that? Like, what team does that? You know,
they did that all like making three threes the game. I think they made like three or four threes that entire game. They did it
They're
all.
They're disgusting.
That's the other thing. They didn't get hot like from three. They just locked you down and then ran out and scored on you every possession.
I mean, it's just. It's infuriating. You know what's infuriating about it is because fans think that that can happen at their school.
Yeah.
It probably can't. It can't. Like, let's just be real about it. Maybe you catch lightning in a bottle and it happens for you like NC State. But it can't. Like, real talk, it can't. Like, that. They're a wagon. Like
it is
you said,
against
Chris,
the Elite
they're
Eight
a wagon.
Team in Illinois who's the number two offense in the country.
they made Terrence Shannon look like me.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like,
it's
wow.
It's nuts, dude.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
This guy who had been averaging 30 points per game comes in and just like couldn't do anything.
Best scorer in college basketball. He is arguably the best scorer in college basketball, and you made him look like a 5'9 white kid at the rec at Texas Tech. Yeah. That's what you made him look like. Me. You made him look like me. It's nuts. It's unbelievable, man.
He was, I will say this for TJ, he was dishing out some sick assists. Just Illinois couldn't make anything.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
They turned him into like he had to be a passer and create. And he was creating amazing shots for everybody else. They just couldn't ever make the shots. A terrific run for TJ in these tournaments that comes to an end at the hands of just the almighty UConn right now. Let's take this over to Texas Tech now. Okay. So one of the first things I kind of wanted to ask you here, RC, is your thoughts on this is because like we mentioned those teams, there's a lot of turnover on all of these rosters, right? You know, I mentioned UConn, they kept just over 50% of their roster, but a team like Alabama had to replace 60% of their roster. So this is ever changing with every team. But for Texas Tech specifically, are we just going to have to get used to every single year we're having to replace, let's see, this year we're losing, you know, we're going to have 8 open spots on the roster. We're going to have to fill a gigantic part of this roster. That's just something we're going to have to get used to. Or do you think Grant McCaslin and his coaching staff in time can establish some consistency to where year over year, you're not having to get to know 8 new faces every single year?
Yes. No, I'm just kidding. I think that's probably what you're going to see. 8 is a lot. Yeah, I don't think you're going to see 8 every year. But 5, yeah, I think that would probably be the norm. And that's not a Grant issue. That's just a modern college basketball issue.
Yeah.
In the sense of the days of the Keenan Evans and Zach Smiths and Justin Grays, Norris Odiasse's, like staying for their whole careers, that's done. Yeah. Like, that's just done because at least how it's currently constructed right now,
unless you're Purdue.
Unless you're them somehow, which is shout out to Matt Painter, I guess. But I mean, I've had people ask me like, do you agree with NIL? I'm like, yeah, if I was a kid, I'd put my name in the portal every 100%. Year.
Yeah.
I want to get a bag. Like, I don't know if I'm going to play pro basketball. I'm trying to provide for my family the best way I can. Like, is that what fans want to hear? No, because fans love to latch on to these guys and have that emotional tie to them and everything. And I completely understand that. But yeah, I think from a Texas Tech perspective, you're probably going to see, you know, 5 new guys a year on average, if not 6. And I think Texas Tech has benefited from the transfer portal more than I think damn near any team you can mention. I mean, you think about it. Let's just go back to the national title game.
Yeah.
You got Matt Mooney and Tariq Owens.
Legends.
That'll play, right? And then you think about it from the standpoint of that COVID year where we didn't get to see him play. Man. You know, okay, yeah. You had a couple guys on there. And then obviously the Mac McClungs of the world, that worked out pretty well. Bryson Williams, Kevin O'Banner.
Adonis.
Adonis. Yeah, I mean, I think Tech from like a standpoint of if you're grading on how they've done in the portal, I think it's worked out pretty well, right? I mean, even just last year, you got Darion Williams.
Yeah.
And the best player.
One of the best players I've watched, I feel like, and it's only just begun, you know?
Brooks has a theory. We just need to go get Grand Canyon's best player and Nevada's best player all over again.
Specifically, I said, just rinse and repeat. Go get the Mountain West Conference Freshman of the Year. Yeah. I think JT Toppin. And then go get a GCU kid who's, you know, double figures. Bam. And then boom.
It's easy.
Bada bing.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, I'll tell you this right now. If Toppin decides to go into the portal, Texas Tech will make a run. I promise you that. They like him. And every program does because he's a freaking stud.
He's good.
But I understand the frustration from the fans' point of view in the sense of like, oh my God, these guys just don't stay. There's no loyalty. It's like, were you saying the same thing about coaches?
Yeah.
When they were flip-flopping around and everything? No, you were like, oh, that's a level up. It's like, well, it could be a level up for their situation too. But from just strictly a Texas Tech perspective, you could argue that Tech has had it better than any school basketball-wise in the sense of like getting transfers because transfers are not supposed to hit at the rate that they have hit when they come to Texas Tech. Like you went to a national title game, okay? Not to mention you had a couple of transfers on that team that went to the Elite Eight.
Tommy Hamilton, man.
Yeah. And Naeem Stevenson.
Naeem.
You know? Oh, and I'd be remiss not to mention, obviously this wasn't on the Elite Eight team, but Davion Warren.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had him. So like the list goes on and on in terms of like how many good guys they've gotten from the portal. Yeah. I get it's Brandon frustrating. Francis. Yeah. I mean, I get it. Well, that's a, never mind. No, I won't go there. But yeah, I think, you know, it's just one of those deals, man, where I get it. It's frustrating in the sense of you want to latch on to those guys. But Texas Tech has done a phenomenal job getting impactful players from the portal. I mean, shoot, your two building blocks for next season are Darion Williams and Chance McMillan. Yeah, you guys portal. Just talked about it. Portal. Like, yeah, it's a give and take. I get it. You don't like seeing these guys go in there. It's one of those deals where it gets bad before it gets good. But I think overall, Texas Tech is one of those programs that has benefited the most. And so roster turnover isn't always a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't hate the portal at all. I like, it's been a blessing for us. It's given us a lot of players that I'm like rooting for and checking Twitter to see their G League highlights and whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
And rooting for Mac McClung and dunk contests and stuff like that. Like, I've been a huge fan of the portal. I just have wondered if we're ever going to get to a point where we can get it to like just five guys that we might be losing, because it feels like every year it's seven or eight. I just want to get it down a couple numbers. And I think Grant's kind of done that. You can see how he's attacking, right? Darion Williams came in after a freshman season, Grant. You know, that I felt was a really good addition. Now you get him for several years. You know, Chance McMillan, a guy that you knew you were going to get a couple years from. And so it's and then you kind of fill in the gaps with some, hey, one and done type players. It feels like he's put a lot of emphasis in getting guys who might be here for a while. I know Dustin's
got, I don't know how accurate this is, but I'm getting
Devin Cambridge
stuff that Devin Cambridge has entered the portal.
Yeah, he's in the portal.
Whoa.
My phone was on silent when we started this, but yeah. Tipton is reporting it. So yeah, he's in the portal.
So that's
interesting from the standpoint of, I know that I think he's probably just doing that for a leverage play, if I have to be honest about it. But he's a guy Texas Tech wants back. Maybe it's one of those situations where he just didn't want to come back to Lubbock. That's a surprising one.
Wow.
That's one that's surprising for sure, in a lot of regards, no doubt about it.
Wow. Catching our reactions live on that one. We were pretty confident in that one, especially because he got hurt, and he's been kind of saying throughout the season that he's planning on returning. So interesting news there, Dustin. I know you got the next question lined up here as well. We'll just try to kind of roll on through that. I know RC's got
yeah, for sure.
It'd be hard to shift gears. Something else that the transfer portal has affected is the high school recruiting, the way we used to build the rosters, you know? And I know Texas Tech has zero high school recruits for this year. How has the portal affected Texas high school recruiting now? What's Grant and the staff's maybe philosophy into that?
Sure, yeah. I think this year's a little weird because you think about when Grant showed up, right? I think it's tomorrow is a year in terms of him like having the press conference.
Yeah, because he had to go through the NIT. So
And so they were already behind the eight ball, so to speak, in terms of, you know, high school recruiting for this class in 2024. So they just prioritized 2025. You get a guy like Buff that knows DFW better than anybody in terms of the high school ranks. And that's the reason you got that walk on from Oak Cliff this past week. So you think about it from that perspective, like, yeah, they're going to do high school stuff. But I also think that the name of the game right now is get old and stay old.
Yeah.
And if you don't, I mean, perfect example is this Kentucky team, right?
Yeah.
Like, they got some older guys on there, but they've also got a lot of young guys playing a lot of minutes. And what happened to them again? They got beat by a team that's as old as crap, you know? Like, I mean, like
Jack Golke and them boys.
Yeah, Golke has been doing my taxes for 35 years. So, I mean, it's one of those deals where you have to find, you know, certain guys that you like. Like, for example, I know Tech is very, very interested in Kingston Fleming. I think he's arguably top three or four guard in that entire class. Do they land him? I don't know. But he's a guy that Texas Tech is prioritizing. There's another guy in Toombs that they're prioritizing in 2025. You're going to see guys that they're prioritizing in 2025 and moving forward. And you even see it in 2026, where I think Henderson is his name that they're prioritizing. But I think it was just the timing aspect of 2024, where they were so already so far behind by getting the job. It's like, all right, let's just focus on the portal, getting the staff together. And then the next year we can focus on high school a little bit more, but while also supplementing the roster with the portal. Also, I am just being bombarded by Cambridge.
So is my phone.
Holy crap.
Man,
that's
lots of surprise in that Devin Cambridge news.
Yeah, I felt from reading up on the Scarlet and Black Insider stuff, it felt like we're still on the like he could do whatever, because didn't he do something similar last year with Arizona State where it's like, Jesus, I remember Christ. When we got him, it was like a big surprise, like, oh, this guy was
committed to Oregon. He was committed to Oregon for 36 hours, and then I don't know what the hell happened. But I just remember like hearing a rumor. I was at a camp here. It was like an AAU camp or whatnot. And all the coaches were here from everywhere. And there was like this rumor in the coaching balcony going around like, oh, Cambridge is entering the portal. Grant and everybody is nowhere to be seen. I mean, they're nowhere to be seen. So I'm like, I can see everybody else. I wonder where they're at. And then I get a text from a buddy. And he was like, yeah, I think Cambridge and Tech are talking. And I was like, you think they're talking? Warren Washington is like one of his best friends.
Yeah.
No crap, they're talking. But apparently they like there's a long story behind it and everything. But again, this isn't tampering technically. If your friends are there and they talk to each other, you can't stop college kids from talking to each other. But apparently like Warren had the inside scoop or something and Tech jumped on it and they got him. But who the hell knows what happens now? I mean, this is nuts. Because he's surprising. That one's surprising. I was asked earlier on a radio show here in Dallas, like who would you be surprised if they entered? And I was like, well, obviously Darion Chance, you know, those guys. I was like, I think Kerwin comes back, or Kerwin, you know, I think he comes back. Like I said, 65-35. And then I was like, oh yeah, you know, Cambridge as well. Like I think Cambridge comes back. So yeah, this one's a little shocking for sure.
He was my most confident in coming back. Like I was like,
it's
hurt.
Just strange, dude. It doesn't make sense. But I guess the portal doesn't make sense sometimes.
The portal, like
you said.
Hey,
you said yourself you'd be in there every year.
Yeah,
it's did. I mean, he damn near has. This might be his fourth school.
Yeah. What, he's Arizona State, Auburn, Tech. Yeah, this would be four stops.
I mean, technically, know. he started at Auburn, with Arizona State, Texas Tech, and now if he goes somewhere else. Yeah, four.
All right.
Good old Warren Washington.
Well, my next question was, so we have eight, well, looks like maybe nine spots now available.
I don't even know at this point.
Dude, sheesh. That's a lot of spots to have to fill. Luckily, there, like you said, there's 1,600 players to choose from. How do you expect Grant and this coaching staff to attack the portal? What do you think? You know, there's obviously guards, posts, big men that we're looking at. What do you think the process is here for them, and try to identify what players they want to be here?
Yeah, I talked about it over on the podcast today, like the daily videos I do, like slow and steady, man. That's what it's going to be. I think there's certain traits that they're identifying at each position that they like. You know, obviously the word physicality was used a ton. They're going to look for guys that are physical down low, try and get, you know, two guys 6'10 or taller.
Hopefully.
Easier said than done.
Yeah.
But that's the want at this point. And then you got to find a brand new backcourt, if you think about that. So, you know, I think that the traits that they're looking at are guys that are physical, obviously provide length from the guard position, guys that are good in the pick and roll, solid off the catch and shoot if need be, can be good primary ball handlers in the sense of, you know, going back and forth and not just having an opposing defense solely squared in on one guy. And then I think that they're looking for, you know, a guard to complement a guy, you know, a guard in that 6'4", 6'5" range. I'm not saying that that's going to be your starting point guard, but a guy that can help maybe another guard you go after if they're a little smaller or whatnot. So I think length, physicality, and certain traits, depending on the position or what they're looking at. And some of those, like I said, at the guard spot, you know, primary ball handler in the pick and roll situation, I think they're looking for better screeners. I just think that they're looking for guys that are probably better than what they had this past year on the defensive end as well. I'm not saying that they're going to be all defensive type guys or anything, but just better players in that regard from that standpoint.
Yeah. Makes sense. 8-9 8-9 roster spots. That's a lot to fill. That's a lot to fill. Do you think Grant's excited about it though? Cause like last year, I think he was kind of handicapped with some players on the team that might have not necessarily wanted like a DeMarion, like Chiron. You think he's like a little bit more excited this year and that the roster is pretty much his own to create, and you don't have any of those kind of holdovers anymore?
Yeah, I think there's probably some excitement about that. I mean, from the standpoint, if he can put his own stamp on it and get the guys that he wants in there. But at the same time, I mean, he got a little bit of talent back.
Yeah.
Which was nice. I mean, the cupboard wasn't completely barren for him in that regard. But yeah, I think probably from the standpoint of just like, you don't want to see guys go and all that kind of stuff in terms of the relationship standpoint. But from the roster construction standpoint, I think he's probably very excited about that, especially having his staff. And, you know, we haven't talked about Dave Smart yet. I think they're going to worry about that assistant later in the future. Like, I'd be surprised if you hear about that here in the next even like 2 weeks. Yeah. Unless they have just somebody lined up and I haven't heard about it, but I think they're going to focus on the portal, and I think that that's very intriguing to him in the sense of like, okay, I saw what we did this year. What do we need to get better at? All right, we're going to go identify those guys and get those traits that we value, and go from there and play Grant McCaslin style of basketball.
Yeah.
So RC, something else staff wise that goes into this is we have literally a guy on the staff who's like the GM of the roster in Buffington. You know, we brought him in from Dallas area, knows the Dallas area AAU scene really well. And what's like the dynamic there with Grant and Buffington being like the pseudo GM on how to identify and recruit these players?
Yeah, I think Grant's going to have the, you know, final say in that regard. But I don't think he would have brought Buff in if he didn't trust him in his evaluation process and what he kind of means in the grassroots level of basketball.
Yeah.
In Texas, again, I live in Dallas, so I go to some of these, you know, AAU circuit events and all that kind of stuff, and like feels like not even 3 minutes as soon as I walk in the building, somebody's talking about Buff. And so he's one of those guys, man, where he's known by everybody in the Dallas scene, and not everybody likes him. But I promise you they know him.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's good that not everybody likes you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think Grant trusts him in the sense of his evaluation and everything. But when it's all said and done, I think Grant will have the final say on who comes in here. And, you know, maybe not everybody likes that, but I think that that's kind of where they're at.
Buff's been one of my favorite additions. My favorites are like the Buff dancing videos after victories.
Little Buff.
Oh, yeah.
Those are good. Yeah, we didn't have the Dave Smart thing on here, but you know, I thought that was an interesting point that you brought up about how this next hire would be slow. Remember how long it took for them to name Dave Smart? Like, I remember everybody be like, when are we going to get an assistant coach? When are we going to name our assistant coach?
They were practicing.
Yeah, it was quite a while. So I think, and that ended up being a great hire. And obviously he's taking over a head coaching job at Pacific. So shout out to him for that. You know, if you're going to lose a coach, you want to lose it to stepping up in the process and stuff. And so any thoughts you had on Dave Smart leaving this program and how that might impact us?
No, I think it'll obviously impact. I think this isn't a hyperbole or anything. He's one of the greatest basketball coaches of all time. And so look at his track record, and I'm sure somebody that's listening to this respects some of the coaches he's beaten while in Canada, you know, whether that's Calipari, Boeheim, a few others as well in terms of the legend status. But it'll impact it a little bit. I know he was beloved by the players. Every time I talked to a player or their family member, it felt like they brought up Dave Smart. And so really good dude. I've never had the chance to actually meet him. So I've just heard things. So good dude from every account, and happy for him and his family. He's been working for this for a long time. Obviously Pacific is going to need a lot of work. They went 0-16 last year in their conference. If y'all remember during the conference tournament season, there was a team that was down at half by 40 plus. That was Pacific.
They had like they're 9 points.
they're horrendous. But they just landed one of the best coaches in modern college basketball history. So I'm just happy for him in the sense of, like you said, he leveled up, got a job that, you know, maybe it's a stepping stone for him. Maybe his family just becomes comfortable there. Who knows? But that's what you want if you're Grant McCaslin. Like, it's almost an insult to coaches if other schools don't come calling about your assistance. That means you're not doing something right.
Yeah.
If guys are getting jobs and trying to get poached away, you're doing something right. And so that's just how that goes. And, you know, it's part of the business. And I'm sure Grant McCaslin is ecstatic for him. It's just probably a headache that he has to fill the role, but well worth the headache in terms of Dave Smart landing a potential dream job.
Do you have anything to add there? Doesn't look like you want to say.
It's a good thing when your coaches are getting plucked to move up and not making lateral / downward moves and getting plucked. So it's a good thing when guys come here and then they get taken to go to a high level head coaching job.
Shout out to him.
Also, by the way, real quick, I'll let you guys know this, because I'm going to record a video after this and put it up on my channel and say the same thing. I think this is a leverage play.
Okay.
By Cambridge.
Try to get a little bit more.
I think he's trying to get a little bit more change. Yeah. That's kind of what I get. And good for him. That's what I literally said. That's what you should do every year. So I have no hate towards it. I think it's a leverage play. Now, does that mean that I think he's coming back to Tech? I don't know. Just because you play the leverage play doesn't mean another team won't throw a bag at you that you can't refuse. But yeah, I think that's kind of the feeling I get from like a couple people that have been talking to me about it, that know much more about the whole situation than I ever could. So yeah, that's kind of
what it would make me wonder what team would throw a bag to a guy who just coming off an ACL injury last season, you know, hasn't been able to put a whole lot of film out there yet. And so it would be odd if like another team came in and threw a big bag at him. But more power to, you know, we're pro power to the players here. You know, they've been getting chipped for a lot of their, especially for Cambridge, for a lot of his college career. You don't know how long your professional career can be. So get that money while you got a chance.
Okay, exactly.
So,
yeah.
Before we kind of move on to your thoughts on March Madness, I know we've spent a good amount of time here, and I know we're having a good time in this conversation. Any kind of names that you're circling right now that Texas Tech is targeting? Is there any kind of names? I know you said it's been a slow, methodical process. Is there any names that we can maybe kind of pay attention to, or listeners here who not really sure where to turn their attention to can kind of be like, hey, here's some guys that we might be interested in? And I know we've sent out a lot, but like maybe – three guys that you're really circled on.
Sure. Yeah. I would say shameless plug alert. Go check out the Scarlet and Black Insider. Anyway.
Please do. I've been on there. I don't really comment, but I just get on there and
you're a lurker.
And,
lurker. Nice.
I'm in the
nice.
Shadows. You know, I like to
There's
lurk.
No problem
I like to
with
read.
That.
I don't like to no get problem. Involved in some of the stuff, but I do like to read what y'all are saying. It's been really, no really fun.
Yeah, that ain't no problem. Lurkers are good too. I'll say this. I'll give you three guys that I'm interested in that I know Texas Tech has contacted. To the severity level that they're in, I don't know. And I don't know if anybody knows outside of that building. So a guy that's super interesting to me is, his name is Deuce Turner. I actually talked about him in the video over on the Back to 12 podcast today. 6'2" guard from San Diego. Averaged about 15 points a game last year there. didn't really have too many assists, about two per game. He has 1 year of eligibility left, but he made all West Coast Conference second team. Good three-point shooter, shot north of 36.5% the past 2 years, has crazy range. I'm talking like over the past 2 years, he has 30-plus threes made from 25-plus feet. That kind of guy.
So he is what Pop thought he could be.
Yeah. No. And to be fair, he's not jacking up as many shots as Pop.
Right.
But yeah. He's got good range. He's a good catch and shoot guy. Good in the pick and roll as the primary ball handler. And I think he's a better passer than his assist numbers show, because he was the guy where if San Diego needed a bucket,
he's the guy.
They went to him. So he's a guy that I'm interested in. Another guy that I think will play college basketball in the state of Texas next year at a high major level is Brandon Wenzel. He went to Wyoming. Will it be at Texas Tech? I don't know. But I do know Tech is interested. And he scored 11.6 points per game last year, just over 5 rebounds. I think it was like 1.5 assists plus 1.5 blocks and steals combined. Another good shooter, 37.5% from three, understands spacing really well, and is a guy that kind of just he's not going to be able to create a shot for himself, but he's kind of, I would say, a more athletic Kerwin Walton is probably the best way to describe him. 6'7". I don't know if I mentioned that or not, but
I would take a more athletic Kerwin Walton in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I don't know if he's like, that's the thing. I don't know if he can play the Kerwin role in the sense of the minutes that Kerwin played, but I think he could play it off the bench, if that makes sense. It'd be a really viable role player. The guy that I'm most interested in is, I think Tech is going to be in his top three, but I think Tech is probably third right now, and that's Kevin Overton from Drake. He's my favorite player that Tech has been connected to. He's got 3 years of eligibility remaining. Averaged about 11.5 points per game last year at Drake, about 3.5 rebounds, 1 assist, shot 35% from three. Does have a connection to Texas Tech. His high school coach is actually on the Tech staff, and Luke Barnwell from Sunrise Christian. So that's a plus. The issue is one of the schools that's going after him, his coach just got the job at West Virginia. And so the other school that's going after him is Oklahoma. He's from Oklahoma City. So those are the three teams I think firmly in the mix. I think Texas Tech is, again, probably third in that regard. But he's a guy where I watch the tape, like, I'm not trying to overhype him, but I think if any of those schools that he goes to, except for, I guess, Oklahoma, because they're in the SEC, I think he could be an all-conference type player by the time he's done wherever he plays, if he goes to the right situation. He's a guy that's, again, 6'5", lengthy, can absolutely cause fits on the defensive end in terms of guard play, where he can, if you got a guard you need defended, his length creates issues. Is he an elite defender right now? No, but he has the traits and the want to do it. And, I mean, 95% of the time, defenses just want to.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Well, cool. Like those names. I just, you know, from a former Red Raider standpoint, Vlad Golden hit the portal. Do you think there'll be any? I don't know if a player has transferred out. Zero. There will be zero. I know a lot of Tech fans were out there tweeting yesterday, bring him back. But
he's not coming back.
There's no way he's coming back. I did see today that South Carolina transfer Michi Johnson is transferring back to Ohio State, where he began his career.
Different coach.
Different
better
coach.
Better NIL program now.
But still, like, that's the first time I've seen a player.
Yeah, it's
go,
like
go to
oh,
school.
Who's that? Who's that offensive tackle from Alabama?
They went to Iowa
for like 3 months just to watch Caitlin Clark play, and now he's back at Bama.
Get an NIL bag and then leave.
Yep. Yeah, Caden Proctor, I think his name is.
Proctor.
Right?
Yes. Proctor. Yeah, Caden Proctor. Proctor.
Yeah. Like
crazy.
Never seen that before.
Crazy.
Until Michi did it today, and I was like, oh. Okay, that's interesting. But yeah, I shouldn't say zero, but I'll put a 0.1 next to it. How about that?
Yeah, you never know what changes. I was just curious because there's the Twitter, once he hit the portal, was like, bring it back. So I just wanted to see if you had heard anything on that front.
I would be pretty surprised if he doesn't end up at Michigan or back at FAU.
Yeah.
I'd be really surprised. Just from Dusty loves him. Yeah. Like, yeah. Dusty loves him. So
yeah, it would make sense if he follows. Hopefully he qualifies to get into Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Vlad is super smart. Yeah, I'd be shocked if he didn't. Maybe they really got to change their standards real quick.
Yeah. Cool. Well, before we let you go, I know you probably got a lot of texts to get to with the Devin Cambridge news. We're sorry that
you're good, man.
You know, it's awesome when news breaks while we got RC, the man, on the show. But let's just kind of get your overall thoughts on a March Madness in the Final Four. We feature UConn on their quest for back-to-back, Alabama, a team that we talked about, kind of that's been successful story in the transfer portal. And then you got NC State, Destiny. The Destiny NC State Wolfpack versus Zach Edey and Purdue. How do you see this Final Four playing out? How have your thoughts been on March Madness and all that?
I think it's been fun. Yeah. It would have been a lot more fun if Tech did stuff, selfishly, obviously. Obviously. But from an entertainment value, I mean, it's the greatest sports spectacle on earth that happens every year, in my opinion. So I love each and every second of it, even if it's a game where UConn is beating the absolute crap out of whoever they played in the first round. I just enjoy it from that perspective. And speaking of UConn, I don't see any team beating them. Yeah. They're so good. It's nuts. Like, remind me, they play Bama first, right?
Yeah, they play Bama.
They're beating Bama by 20. Like, they're beating Bama by 20. And then let's just say the Cinderella story runs for NC State, and they play Purdue. Cool, they're gonna beat Purdue too. They'll probably beat them by double digits. Yeah. Like, cool. It's just nuts, dude. Like, everybody talks about them in the sense of like repeating and everything like that. But like when you get down to it, they are so good at every facet of the game. Yes. Like it's. Like I was talking to this about with my buddy the other day, and he's a Big East guy. Went to St. John's, whatever. He moved down here to Dallas, and we were talking. And I was like, "What are your thoughts on UConn?" And he was like, "Dude, I don't know what their weakness is. Like, let's say they take away the big man. All right, they could shoot from deep. They could beat you off the dribble. All right, so let's say that they take away the dribble. Cool. They feed it down to the big man. He can kick it out for three." Let's say they take away the three. Cool. They'll beat you off the dribble and they got the big man for the lob threat. Like, and then I was like, yeah, that's a really good point. And then I was like, it's even worse on defense.
Yeah.
Because they can switch everything. And then if they get beat, they got a legit 7'2" guy that's athletic as hell down there. It's just nuts, man. Like and you know, the crazy part is too, I was listening to a podcast today that was like, this is arguably the most old fashioned Final Four we've had in a while, in the sense of three of the teams play through the post.
Yeah.
Like Alabama's the only one that doesn't. Alabama's Mike D'Antoni 7 seconds or less type stuff. But
yeah, Klingon, Edie, and DJ Burns, like that's
you play through those guys
right there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's very interesting in that regard. I think when it's all said and done, I think Purdue's story of trying to be the next Virginia falls short and they lose to UConn. You said it best earlier, Brooks. UConn's such a wagon, dude. It's nuts.
It's crazy.
Like I just if they lose, it's because they lost and not the other team beat them.
Yeah. That's you gotta play 100% perfect. You cannot have a mistake like at all in the game to beat them.
If Alabama has more than 8 turnovers, the game's done. You don't have to watch it anymore. It almost feels like and then if they don't make like 12 plus threes, the game's over. Like, and Alabama could do that. I mean, the job that Nate Oates has done is, wow, phenomenal. Yeah. But yeah, man, I just don't see anybody beating UConn. And I picked them to win. I just didn't think they were going to be this dominant. I thought somebody would at least cause an issue.
I thought Illinois. I had that game. I was like, Illinois might be the only team that can maybe keep it close. And then, like we saw, just nope. Nope.
It wasn't even in the same ballpark. 30-0.
It's crazy.
I've never seen anything like that.
When they're locked in, they are, I think, almost impossible to beat. And the last 2 years in the tournament, they've just been extremely locked in.
Does the home court advantage aspect of y'all, like, play into y'all's thought process in picking UConn, though? Because think about it. UConn's basically played nothing but home games in the tournament. They played in Brooklyn, and then they played in Boston.
Yeah, Boston.
And now they have to go to Phoenix. Like,
they had an easy road.
Yeah, well, and they should. They deserved it. They're the number one seed. That's what you earned, right? But that's the only thing that kind of throws me for a loop. But also at the same time, they've been there, done that. Like, half of their team has won a title, so they're experienced with it. Yeah, so I don't know. It's just so hard to pick against them.
They didn't have to go through, like, you know, Kansas got upset before they would have had to play them. And you know, they had a couple, you know, they had to play San Diego State in the national championship. So they didn't have to play some of the big teams out there. But, you know, this run, they, you know, a rematch against San Diego State, they put them to rest pretty quickly.
Beat them by 30.
Northwestern and Boo Booey, they destroyed. Illinois, TJ Shannon, they destroyed. It's just they're a freight train that's just like, I don't want to get in the way of. But all right, man. Well, always enjoy having RC Maxfield on the tailgate. We spent about an hour and a half with him, a little over an hour and a half. Lots of stuff to talk about. Portal season is like NBA free agency nowadays, but it lasts longer.
It's on just steroids. Like,
it's
on
just crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts.
It's just crazy. So good to have someone in the know. Hop on. RC, go ahead and plug everything that you've got going on. I know you got your Back to 12 podcast. I know you're Scarlet and Black Insider for us. So go ahead and shout out everything you're doing right now.
Yeah, those are the two main things. You can follow me on Twitter if you want, at RCMB323. It's mostly just a bunch of – do y'all know who Sketch is?
Yes.
Thank you, brother.
Oh, brother. Tuesday.
Type stuff on there for me right now. But I'll post tech stuff on there. But, yeah, the two main ones are – Scarlet and Black Insider, that's been a lot of fun, launching a new kind of Texas Tech community and platform there. And I think we're about to hit like 200 subs, which is nuts for the first month. Did not expect that, but it's been awesome interacting with everybody over there. And then not too far away from 10,000 over on the Back to 12 podcast too. So in terms of subscribers. So those are the two things I got going on. Probably spend too much time on the internet if you ask my wife discussing Texas Tech basketball and football, but it pays the bills too. So she can get the hell over it. Please actually cut that out. I don't want her to have any ammunition on me. I went too far there. That's on me. Sorry. Please cut that. Yeah. In post. Sorry, babe. Sorry.
No, agree there. Appreciate you always being willing to hop on and chat Texas Tech sports with us. One of our favorite guys in the vastness of Texas Tech media personalities. We always enjoy our time with RC.
Dude,
man.
So
appreciate
many.
It.
There's it's so awesome, many.
It's awesome. Awesome. It's great to have this community. It's great to have this community, especially when somebody comes at you. You get everybody on Twitter. That's in you. And so we close that's the true. Big loop right there. All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, RC.
Well, that will do it for us this week at Tailgate Talks. We appreciate RC Maxfield always being willing to join the tailgate and discuss some Texas Tech basketball this week. We hope y'all enjoyed the conversations that we had about players entering the portal, the overall NIL transfer portal era discussion that we had, and how Texas Tech is going into this offseason and attacking the transfer portal. And now, you know, maybe 9 spots with the news of Devin Cambridge hitting the transfer portal as we recorded. Always appreciate RC. It's always fun to talk to him and just kind of talk Texas Tech sports for about an hour and a half. So I know it was a long interview. We hope you enjoyed all of it. And to catch everything that we are doing here at Tailgate Talks, please go ahead and give us a follow. Follow us on Twitter at @Tailgate_Talks. On social media, that's where we do most of our posting and interacting. But you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram. We're also on the Scarlet and Black Insider under Tailgate Talk. So we are there lurking in the shadows, waiting for the right time to respond to some messages. Also follow us on Apple and Spotify. That's where we post our episodes each week. Give us the 5 stars for the tailgate. We always appreciate those. And if you listen to us on Apple, you can always leave us a review there. Thanks again for hanging out with us this week. Hanging out with us and RC Maxfield as we talk Texas Tech basketball offseason. As we said, it is NBA free agency on steroids, and it is just begun. So we'll be here to tackle all things with the transfer portal as players commit to Texas Tech, as maybe more players leave. Who knows what's going on? But appreciate you guys hanging out with us. And as always, we will catch y'all at the next tailgate. Peace.